Oh, before we move on to that,
Oh.
how loud is my cat?
She's been just like rubbing all over my feet and making noises the entire time.
Hello and welcome to the Seems to Me podcast. I am Keaton DeRocher, baseball editor at Sports the Website, and with me is Mike Lavery, managing editor at Sport the Website. You can find me on Twitter at KeatonTDG, and Mike can be found on Twitter at PassTheMike. Mike, how are you doing today?
Good. Did the spoken Keats get retired?
It did, yeah. We are working on growing the TDG brand, so I spearheaded the Twitter handle change, and the TDG brand is now in the handle.
Nice. I mean, not that it was hard to spell before, but now no one should have any problems finding you on the internets.
Yeah, that's the hope. Bring in more traffic. Unless, I guess, for whatever reason, you try and spell Keaton in a weird way. But yeah. It's spelled just like Batman, so just follow that.
Who is your favorite? Wait, let me rephrase this question. Fuck, marry, kill. Michael Keaton is Batman. Who is the last one? Not Affleck, before Affleck.
Christian Bale.
And George Clooney.
Christian Bale is definitely the Mary. That's actually kind of tough. I'll kill Clooney as Batman.
Oh, jeez. I mean, yeah. he probably was the worst Batman.
Yeah. I mean, like, as a person, I would probably fuck him. But as Batman, I'm going
to
kill him.
Yeah. All right. That's all I need to know. That's what the people are here for.
Yeah. So the podcast can be found at Seems to Me Pod on Twitter and at Sports the Tweets for everything Sports the Website related. And on this episode, as usual, after a little bit of a hiatus with some scheduling conflicts, we'll dive right into your regularly scheduled content. So, bold predictions for the week. We have kind of like 2 weeks-ish to go back. So my two predictions were someone was going to beat the freeze, and that did not happen. Although in the past 2 weeks, he's only had one race, but he did win it, as, you know, the freeze does. So got that one wrong. But, you know, the freeze, I went to a few Braves games last year, and that was by far like one of the most entertaining things that any ballpark has ever done, is the beat the freeze race. It's tremendous. What was one of your predictions?
What were some of my predictions? Oh, so I said that Jose Peraza would have more stolen bases than Bill Hamilton. When it came time to record last week, it was tied at 0-0, and then we pushed it back a couple days, and then Peraza got one, so he was ahead. And then this last week, Hamilton got two more than Peraza, so now Now Hamilton's up by one.
Bummer. Should we delay recording again just until Peraza has more?
Yeah, probably. I mean, both of them are non-factors in anything, so I'm sure it's not a huge deal. And then what my prediction was going to be last week was that the Orioles would be over 500 this week, and they were 6-10 over the last 10 days. So that was good. And then I also was going to say Javi Baez will get a walk, and he still hasn't gotten a walk. He hasn't walked since April 11th. I know he's one of your, like, awesome to own guys, and I think that's part of the reason he's awesome to own, because like he's swinging, man.
Oh yeah, no, he's the definition of swing away, like the quintessential. If you look up X in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of whatever. If you look up a picture swing away in the dictionary, it's Javi Baez.
Yeah, his OBP was over 900, and that's without walks. Like I'm sorry, his OPS was over 900. Like that's ridiculous.
That is.
I wish I saw the article. There's only one other player who's done that in like recent memory, and I can't remember who it is now. But yeah, he's an exciting guy to watch. I might double down on that. He's just he's due. I don't know. It's been over a month without a walk.
Yeah, so. I mean, you would think the law of averages has got to. I mean, he doesn't walk often, but he has to eventually.
Yeah. Like, does that count? Intentional walks, does that go up in the... I know it'll be like IBB, but when I'm just looking at his... Well, it goes as a walk in his percentages and stuff?
Yeah, it does count as a walk and like a walk rate and stuff like that.
That's all I was wondering. All right. What do you have coming up? What do you have predicting this week?
Well, we still have one more to review, which is probably the most important one.
Oh, my God.
Can't believe you're going to overlook that. I continued my streak of someone is going to finally ride the bullpen cart, and thank you, Colin McHugh of the Houston Astros, for finally using the Diamondbacks bullpen cart.
I can't believe it wasn't a Diamondback either.
Yeah, and the best part was it happened the night we recorded our last one, when we were talking about trying to reach out to the person who drives it to get them on the pod, and we had we were going to do a whole social media campaign for it.
It worked.
And it was that night. Yeah, it did. It was probably the most effective campaign that has ever happened.
Yeah, before we even posted the podcast, our campaign just took over.
Yep, it already worked. And Colin McHugh finally wrote it, and then I didn't get the name of it, but a member of the Diamondbacks also did ride it. So we've had two rides in the past 2 weeks.
Know what they should call it? McCuber. Like an Uber. Call McCue. All right, don't worry, I'm here all week.
I thought you were going for like a McGoober reference.
No. No, I'll stick with McCuber.
Well, I mean, I kind of feel like they should, because the first person to use it wasn't a Diamondback, and it's kind of embarrassing.
And it did have, I talked about us sponsoring it too, and it did have sponsorship on it. I don't remember, it was like GoDaddy or someone. So, but.
Yeah, it's some weird thing.
Yeah. So, you said another Diamondback, or a Diamondback did it. Are you going to triple down on this and keep the streak going, or are we set with the
one? I think it's exhausted now, because I guess the other way to go is that a Diamondback would eventually ride it, and now that's happened too. So, I think it could be officially retired from our bold predictions.
I mean, it was bold. It took a lot longer than we expected.
Yeah, it really did.
So what do you have for this week?
Like we said, May 3rd was the original record date for this episode, and then some scheduling conflicts pushed it back. And so there was still a bunch of people, even after we had Sean Manaea's no-hitter, that were coming really close to no-hitters. So I was going to predict another one. And so since May 3rd, there's actually been two. There was the combined no-hitter in Mexico from the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 days later, James Paxton's no-hitter. So they're coming in spades again. So I'm going to just stick with that one and say that we're going to have another one.
I mean, I think it'd be, at this point, more bold to predict a hitter. To say, like, this pitcher's going to give up a hit this game because these no-hitters are so common.
Yeah, or that there won't be a no-hitter.
Yeah. So I had, what I have is, you talked about the mixed no-hitter, but I am going to predict that two teams will start relievers this week. I know that we talked about in the past but if I was a manager, one of the things that I would try to do is build a team of all just elite relievers and no starters. And 2 days in a row, yesterday and today, Sergio Romo started for the Rays, and the reason that they did it, Kevin Cash said, was so they could line up the matchups right away. And that's part of the reason that I would do it. I think it's just so easy to manage instead of trying to like hope you're going to need to match up at the end of the game. You can match up at the beginning of the game. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting approach, and I think it's really neat that a team is going ahead and doing it. And it makes sense to kind of play the game backwards, in a sense, because the starting pitchers, I mean, with the exception of some closers, the starting pitchers are generally the best pitchers on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And the deeper you can get them into the games when players are tired, the outs are more important, the better. And that's the one thing that, you know, always comes up, you know, for every team, is getting the starters deeper into the game to spare the bullpens. And if you know you're going to end up having to dip into your bullpen anyway, why not go ahead and try it for the first inning? And that was the intent yesterday, was to get Yarbaugh deeper into the game. And so he pitched 6 1/3, which coming in the second got him pitching into the eighth instead of pitching into the seventh.
Well, now you say that the starters are the best pitchers on the team, and that's true because they have the most pitches in their arsenal. But if you look at like whip and strikeout percentage, it's gonna relieve, it's gonna favor the closers because they don't have to come in and throw gas for an inning. So like, if you were planning to do this, they would, they could be the best pitchers on your team if you built around it, because the reason the starter's so good is because they might have extra pitches, so they don't get predictable. So, you know, batters can't, the second, third time through the order, they can't kind of predict what's going to happen. But like a team full of closers, you don't really have to worry about that. So they might have the most athletic potential, but they might not be the most skilled pitchers on the team.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, like, I understand. I agree that starters are the best, but that's, I think, just because they have more of a variety of what they can offer.
Yeah, and it's more often that starters flame out and go to the bullpen than someone in the bullpen is really good and becomes a starter.
Well, yeah, because at a certain point, they would need to be stretched out, where a starter, you don't need to unstretch them or whatever.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's a huge difference between the starters and relievers, because the relievers know that they're just going in for a short spurt, so they give everything they have right off the bat. Versus, I mean, we saw this, the perfect example is Joe Kelly. Dude can touch 100 miles an hour if he's...
If he can touch the plate.
yeah, if he can find the plate. But if he's in there for an inning, he can do it. If he tries to start, then he doesn't start off the game throwing as hard as he can because he's trying to make it deeper into the game, and then all of his stuff becomes much less effective. So for trying to manage a game, I think it's a great idea. You play the matchups in the first inning, get your starters deeper into the games when the outs matter the most. You can still bring your closer in the ninth. And you can play the matchups earlier on to get ahead of, you know, the runs scored and all that. I think I'm really interested to continue to watch how the Rays handle it. And there was already speculation that Joe Maddon was going to start doing this with Carl Edwards now, too.
Yeah, and I think it works best for the small market teams that can't spend $30 million on Chris Sale and $30 million on David Price. They can just spend, you know, $10 million to get some bullpen help and have crap for starting pitchers that is, I mean, it might not be their choice, but at least it's like making the best of a bad situation. So what did you have for any other predictions?
So my other one is Tyler Chatwood is leading all qualified starting pitchers in walks at kind of a ridiculous rate. And there's no pitcher that really wants to pitch to Bryce Harper at all, for very good reason. So my guess is that Bryce Harper, over the next course of next week, ends up with more walks than Tyler Chatwood allows.
So when you say he leads the league in walks, out of start, you're saying out of starters, he's given up the least amount of walks?
The most.
The most walks. Okay. So not a good thing.
Right. So Bryce Harper is going to have to get walked a ton to match Chatwood. And I think that pitchers are so afraid of Harper right now that's going to happen.
Yeah. Interesting. There's been a lot of talk on the sports talk around here about how Mookie Betts compares to Bryce Harper and Mike Trout. And he's beating him in a lot of the categories. But in OBP and walks, man, Harper and Trout were blowing him out of the water by like 60 walks or something.
And we'll get to that conversation a little bit later.
So let's go to our observations, because I have one that I think we both found pretty entertaining, and that is Fortnite. So in Boston, David Price has carpal tunnel, and they push back his start. And the same time they pushed back the start, an article came out, I think it was ESPN, and it was about how he plays Fortnite, and there's things he was saying where the game will end at 11 and they'll go home and they'll play Fortnite till 2:30 a.m. And you know, if they're saying that it's obviously like till 4 a.m. or something. And then there was also, he said that sometimes he needs to make sure he remembers to eat, because he'll just play for so long that someone needs to tell him to take 30 minutes to have lunch or have dinner or whatever. And then there's a lot of Red Sox that play this game, and Xander's double celebration, I guess, is some sort of Fortnite celebration. And then the Brewers, they play Fortnite on the Jumbotron. And then the Astros also do Fortnite celebrations. So I know, it must have been in the 90s, Joel Zumaya, he hurt his elbow playing Guitar Hero, and his career was never the same. And some sports, like basketball. Was it Derrick Rose? Not Derrick Rose. Oh, Jay Williams. He had a contract that he couldn't like ride motorcycles because, you know, obviously that's dangerous. But should it get to the point where the teams almost have to monitor how much video games they play? Price even said he's not going to play in the clubhouse anymore, and all the media took that as he's not going to play anymore when he's really saying, I'm not going to play it in front of you guys.
So for proper credit, it was Jen McCaffrey's piece from The Athletic. That was the story.
For which site?
The Athletic.
Okay.
And so, and the emphasis, what made it so ridiculous is that the emphasis was that it wasn't carpal tunnel, it was mild carpal tunnel, which has meant his wrist was a little sore, which literally just means he was playing it way too much, and his wrist was just in an awkward position for so long that now it's sore. And that's just, it adds to just a laundry list of ridiculous excuses that he's had that's caused him to miss games. I'm going to give him a pass on the allergies. I don't have allergies myself, but I know people who do. And when seasons are changing, it's like debilitating for them to just be alive. So I can understand if he has allergies and they were that bad that he really couldn't pitch in Texas. I get that. But the, like, I can't pitch when it's cold. I can't pitch when it's hot.
He also said he's allergic to his laundry detergent. Something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. That came up in Tampa Bay to the point where they would wash all of his stuff separate from the rest of the teams. That was ridiculous.
Yep.
So it just kind of adds another wrinkle into that.
Can you think of any other injuries that were like this, where someone had something pushed back? Because I mean, there's always been ones where they say like, "Oh, he broke a glass or something in bed," and then it's actually like they're probably like, were drunk or something. So there's always been like some lies to cover up stuff, but can you think of anything like as ridiculous as video games being a reason where someone misses a start?
I can't remember exactly what it was or who it was. I know there's been, there was a pitcher. It wasn't Joel's Maya, it was the other old fart for Detroit who was like trying to open a can of something and ended up pulling a muscle in his back. And then there was Jabba Chamberlain almost having to have his foot amputated from being on a trampoline.
This year, I think Sal Perez tore his MCL.
Oh yeah.
Carrying luggage, or like tripping while carrying luggage.
Yeah. A freak accident again from this year with a catcher was Molina taking a 100-mile-an-hour fastball to the balls and needing emergency surgery.
Did you hear what they got him for protection?
A bulletproof cup.
Yeah. I mean, if that was an option, I would have had that in the first place. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that is, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because the Red Sox actually have had, not a history, but experience dealing with pitchers in carpal tunnel because Bronson Arroyo, when he was with the Red Sox, he's a very avid music guy and plays guitar pretty frequently. And he ended up getting carpal tunnel from playing guitar. And so his cure for it was not playing during the season and playing even less during the off season so that he could get through the year without having any issues, which is kind of interesting that it's not the first time this has happened to a Red Sox pitcher. Although I would take playing guitar over video games. But I will say the Brewers playing on the Jumbotron is really cool.
Yeah. That'd be cooler if it was like Mario Kart, but it'll do. Fortnite will do. Have you ever played Fortnite?
I have not.
Yeah, me neither. I was thinking about diving into it to talk about this, but I was too worried I would, first of all, get owned and swore at by, like, 12-year-olds, and then also I might just keep playing and get carpal tunnel and miss work, so. So what else have we seen this week?
One of mine, so this is actually something that surprised we didn't pick up on earlier, or at least talk about, but the Nationals moved Bryce Harper to the leadoff spot, and in his first game, hit 2 home runs, so that seemed like it worked. Joe Maddon with the Cubs has been using Kyle Schwarber as a leadoff man.
And Rizzo was also using leadoff.
Yeah, and so now this seems to be the trend of using these more power hitter guys as the leadoff hitters versus like third or fourth in the order once there are some people on base. And I'm interested if this is going to end up becoming like the league-wide trend where, I mean, we'd always kind of, we had figured out basically that with Moneyball, essentially, that the lineup didn't really matter. And it really only matters for the first inning, and after that, it doesn't. So, and the, I guess a small shift in thinking through a lineup is a lot of National League teams will have the pitcher bat eighth instead of ninth because there's more of a chance that you can get more players on in front of the heart of the order. But this is an interesting one that I'm curious to see if many more teams are going to adopt. And I guess you could technically say that the Red Sox are doing it too with Mookie Betts leading off as a power hitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were saying today that he's on a pace for 160 runs and 100 RBIs, which would be crazy to score 160 runs and drive in 100. But it's an interesting thing because there's two ways to think about it. Obviously, you either want, like, you can have your best hitter on base to mess up the rest of the inning for the pitcher, you know, put the pressure on them, or you could put them later in the lineup so hopefully people get on ahead of them and can they can drive people in. I like the way that they do it. I like having Harper lead off or Mookie lead off. I might consider the number two spot instead, but I mean, this is just taking it to an extreme. And it brings me to a lineup suggestion that I would have. I don't know why teams, National League teams in home games, don't bat the pitcher third and start the game with a batter in that spot. And then by the next time they come around, you get, you know, three extra outs until the pitcher has to bat again. Is that a really dumb idea?
No, that's really smart. I saw that in the pre-show notes as the batting pitcher third, I was like, that doesn't make any sense at all. But yeah, having you explain that makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, I didn't add the part that a batter would be in the starting lineup. Like theoretically, yeah. Like Kyle Schwarber, if he wasn't playing that day, but he was just going to be like a pinch hitter, would be listed as the starting pitcher. And then the bottom of the first, he comes out and you put in, you know, John Lester or whoever. So that's something I've wanted to do for a long...
The downside to that is you would lose whoever that bench bat is, but mm-hmm. How often do you end up going through your entire bench
in
the game anyway?
You want to start off the game with the best advantage possible. So it's all it's really doing is saving you like three spots in the batting lineup, but that could be a viable three spots. And then you could maybe just use the best batter against that starting pitcher in that spot on the bench instead of using maybe your best overall hitter, so you can save him. So if like Eduardo Nunez was still in the Giants and he was really good against the starting pitcher, they could put him in there for the first inning and then take him out in the pitcher and then, you know, whatever. They could do the kind of thing like they're doing with the starting pitcher having reliever go. They could do matchups in the first inning.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, listen up, managers. Let's try this. See, I was all in on the pitchers, all relievers pitching. Now I want to do this. This is my next thing to get pushed into the league.
You're going to be hired away as the GM in no time.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I think Kapler's been doing better from what it seems, but I was going to say the Phillies will call me up. And actually, now they're talking about it, I predicted... Oh, actually, it's going to come up later, I think. We can just get to it now if we want. I predicted that the first manager fired would be Buck Showalter, and this week he showed up his pitcher. I think it was Gausman. Xander took him deep, and before Xander was even to second base, he's already going out to pull the pitcher. And I don't really get upset about that, and there's been so much talk about it. Is it really that bad for – is he really showing up the pitcher that much by doing that? Like, he's pulling him anyways.
Yeah, I don't think it is. It's not like it's a live play. It was like it wasn't a deep triple or something to the triangle, and he's like going to back up a play, and Buck Showalter's giving him the candy cane yank off the field. It was a home run. It was in the middle of the trot. Why not go get your guy?
And if anything, he's saving time. They want to make the baseball game shorter. But like, I think it's just a sign that he is done with the Orioles. Like, he doesn't want to be there anymore. And I think he is going to be the next person gone. They're already out of it. They had when I was looking up to do the prediction that they would be over 500, at the time they had the least amount of wins in baseball.
It's really a matter of time. It's not going to be as long. I think you're dead on with that one. I can't think of another manager that would have better odds.
Yeah. And then I also want to readdress Patrick Corbin. You might have better stats on me than this, but I was really worried that he would do his arm damage just by throwing so many sliders, and I don't know what's happened in the last start or two, but from that point on, every start he's made, the miles per hour on his pitches have gone down. Do you happen to have those numbers in front of you still?
Yes. I'm actually just pulling up the pitch FX data right now. And the velocity over his last three starts has gone up.
Hmm.
In each of those last three. So there was a significant drop basically coming up into the, it was like a 2 mile per hour drop coming into the month of May. And now it's creeped back up to, so his average was like just over 92. It's like 92 and a half.
Does the same report say how many sliders he's been throwing? Like if his percentage has gone down or anything?
By game?
Yeah, I don't know if they break it down that much, do they?
That does okay. not. I might have. Well, I mean, I'm sure it's there. I just would need yeah. to do a little bit more digging. But essentially, his velocity has been back on the uptick over the past four starts.
I wonder if he's learning to regulate stuff better. I don't remember. Last year, he was healthy most of the year, right? But I don't know even how many. What his highest amount of innings pitched is. Because for a while, he was like an injury. He had the injury tag on him. I just don't know. Maybe he's managing his arm better. He's learning when he can take some steam off and put steam on and stuff like that. But it's interesting that it's like such a roller coaster.
It is. The most innings that he had thrown in a season is 208. That was in 2013. Then he missed all of 2014 with Tommy John. And then last season threw 189. So he was almost right back up to 200 last season.
If you were telling somebody in fantasy to buy, sell, or hold, what would you recommend at this point?
Buy.
Okay. I'm not sure anymore. Like, I was saying sell before. Now that his velocity has been going up, now I'm kind of on the hold at the moment just to see what happens.
There's got to be something here. So, oh, interesting. Surprise. And his fastball usage over the last four starts has gone slightly up, we'll say. 48%, 50%, a huge dip to 43%, and then back up to 51%. So it's been pretty much around 50%, which I guess that's his total for the season. So far this season, that's been relatively stable. Yeah, so his velocity is back up to just shy of 93 on his fastball. So that's perfect after it took some rather crazy dips. But the slider usage his average is 36%. And the last four starts, it was 44, which was way high. 29, which is well below. 36, which is right at that average. And then 31%, which is well below. So he's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, maybe it's like matchup dependent or something. That's interesting. All right, so you say buy, I say hold. So what do you have next?
I have that, getting back to the conversation we kind of started earlier. So Mike Trout had been in a little bit of a slump. Going 3-for-30 over the course of 10 games or so. And Mookie Betts had been murdering the Baltimore Orioles over that time frame. And that led to a lot of people on Twitter, New England Twitter specifically, but some national Twitter as well, talking about if Mookie was better than Mike Trout as a baseball player. Mike Trout is still the best player in the game.
It's not just Boston Twitter. There's an ESPN article from 2 days ago from Dave Schoenfield where he says that Mookie should be the MVP over Mike Trout.
Yes, and on the same day, they also had an article from another writer talking about how Mike Trout is actually on pace for the greatest single season in Major League Baseball history.
Nice. I wonder how they even, like, just by war, like, how can they even equate that?
Yeah, I would guess it's probably war.
War's pretty astronomical.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Trout is pretty freaking good.
So right now his WAR is only 3.6. I mean, that's high. Oh no, I'm sorry, that's Mookie. Right now his WAR is 3.9. So his WAR is a little bit higher than Mookie's. But yeah, I mean, they're what, a fourth of the way through the season, and he has a WAR of 4 right now. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So it is by WAR, and the single season record for WAR is 12.9.
Yeah, and he's like headed towards like right around 12 at the moment.
Yeah, Roger Maris set the record has the record for single season WAR at 12.9, and Mike Trout is on.
He's on pace for like 15. It looks like actually.
Yeah, and that is an article from Sam Miller, who is a fantastic baseball writer, over at ESPN, formerly of Baseball Prospectus. So what do you think? Where are you? I still believe that Mike Trout is the best player in baseball. And Mookie Betts, I think he has similar tools. So I think he has a chance to, you know, be considered one of, I mean, if he isn't now, he should be considered one of the best three. You know, it should be Trout, it should be Harper, and it should be Mookie in some order. But to me, Trout's still the clear number one.
Yeah, I think so too, but I also think Trout is at the top of his plateau, which obviously isn't saying, that's not an insult. The plateau is amazing, but we've seen a rise from Mookie every year, so he could still be growing. He's a year younger. He's going to turn 26 soon, so he's pretty much at his athletic peak, but he might have more upside than Trout, whereas if I was to take them for this season, I would still take Trout over Mookie. Defensively, he is the best defender in the league when it comes to runs saved, but he's also playing right field. I mean, right field at Fenway is tough, but I'd rather have like an elite fielding center fielder than an elite fielding right fielder.
Yeah, it is kind of absurd to think that a right fielder is leading all of baseball in defensive runs saved, but right field in Fenway is essentially another center field, so there's a little bit of a caveat. But yeah, it is. I mean, he's not playing every game in a wide open center field, and he's still leading the league in defensive runs saved. It's kind of incredible.
And the thing is, I guess Mookie's more fun to root for. Neither of them have like explosive personalities, but Mike Trout is plain toast, man.
Is he?
I think so. What's the most memorable, like, not a baseball play that you can think of Mike Trout just being like
chugging someone? Mike's secret stuff in the dugout?
That's true. Okay, fine.
I think it's just the West Coast bias.
Maybe. I mean, he's not even the most exciting player on his team.
That is true. And interestingly enough, I would think with two relatively good seasons, well, I guess he's not playing in the field, so that hurts him, but I would think maybe Ohtani has a chance to have the single season WAR record if he's also pitching.
Also, did you see what Mike Socha said about he wouldn't stop Ohtani from being in the home run derby?
Yeah, why would he?
I don't know, but I just think it would be, I would love to see him in the home run derby, but I always get worried that it's going to ruin people's swings because once in a while it does.
But yeah, circa, was it 2012, Josh Hamilton?
Yeah, if he was in the home run derby, I think that'd be the highest rated home run derby ever.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I would love it.
Yeah, he can pitch to some of the batters, he can bat, he should do it all at the home run derby.
Yeah, so do you have one more observation from the week?
Yeah, this one's pretty quick, and it just happened today, and that's bye-bye to Joey Bats. He got cut by the Braves. He batted under 150. It was nice to see him, but I mean, the Braves offense and the young Braves, they don't really need him, and especially if he's playing like crap, but even before that, they didn't need him, so it's just sad to see him go in a whimper, you know? Maybe him and Ichiro can start their own podcast where they travel around and just do crazy things together.
We should reach out and see if they want to come on as guests.
Yeah?
Yeah, that is a bummer. But it wasn't a great... it was a short run. It was only 12 games, but he only had 5 hits in those 12 games. So it seems like that this might be the end.
Yeah. All right, so on to good news. What is some of your favorite moments from...
Well, I have two. And my first one is obviously... someone rode the bullpen cart.
How many times did you watch the video?
14.
Is it just like a GIF on loop that you have?
Yes, it was. But it was awesome. Like, he was just chilling in the back, like, yeah, all right, I could do this. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think it lived up to the expectations. The only thing that would be better if it, like, something mechanically happened to the bullpen cart or it hit somebody or hit something. We've pretty much hit the peak of bullpen carting, I think.
Yeah.
So they should make an app on the, like, if you get the MLB TV app, there can be like a bullpen cart game on there that'd really get the people talking.
I believe actually it was not a Diamondbacks player now because it's kind of coming back to me. It may have been Sean Doolittle that was the other person to ride it.
You might be right. Yeah, I think it was Sean Doolittle. Boo the Astros or the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, it was. It was Sean Doolittle. Yeah, okay. Yeah, and he was asked about it after, and he said that he was considering doing it more because he got to the mound faster. he got through his warm-ups quicker, and he ended up striking out the side in that inning. So that's two opposing players that have ridden the cart. No one from the Diamondbacks still has done it.
I wonder if they even, like, address it with the team, if like to be like, hey, would you guys want us to bring back the bullpen cart? I mean, obviously they didn't, or else guys would be riding it.
Right? I feel like they had to. Been like, hey, guys, we're going to bring back the bullpen cart. Also, someone's paying to have it sponsored. And like, I remember seeing the sponsor, and it was something I had never heard of before. And I had no idea what they did. So it's not like it's hurting them at all. But I'd be a little pissed.
Do you think they have someone on the payroll that's job is to drive the bullpen cart? Or do you think he has another job? And they're like, all right, Johnny, we're going to need you in the cart in 5 minutes. Or do you think like that's his only job?
I would hope there's more to it.
They should get fans to do it. I mean, yeah. Sober fans, but not during the game, but like, you know, the day before the game, like, oh, Keaton, you won on Twitter. They're like, you won. You can drive the bullpen cart tonight or something. You know, that'd be cool promotion to do, something like that.
It's on track, and it's a logistics company specializing in shipping service.
That's on the West Coast. It?
Yes.
You know, this building complex I moved into now, they have automated cars that drive around. They should get an automated bullpen cart. I think that would be more exciting, so we can see like the robot uprising firsthand.
Yeah, first you want robot umpires, then you want robot bullpen carts.
Yeah. Bring on the robots, man. I'm ready for this world to end.
Yeah.
In a bath of robot.
I'm pretty with it, too. All right, so what was one of your favorite moments?
So mine, it's kind of old now, but I had the Mets batting out of order. And the last two times it's happened in baseball, it's been in the first inning. And I guess that makes sense because the second time up, you'll know who you're after. But this time it was just as simple as the card that they turned in did not match the card that they had posted electronically. They said electronically in the dugout. I don't know. I didn't know that they did it electronically now. But they just said the two lineup cards didn't match. And of course it happened to the Mets. That's like the most Mets thing possible.
Yep.
The only more Mets thing that I can think of is yesterday when we got messaged by a Mets fan asking us who they could trade their two best players for.
Yep. So, that's about it.
So, Zeke, when you listen, just know that your Mets are having some trouble even just getting up to plate in the first inning. I think trading Syndergaard is the least of their problems.
Yeah, and all he keeps doing is just sending us who should the Mets trade for this, because our first one was who should they trade to get a catcher, and then the next one was who should they trade, who was it? It was somebody else.
Know what the Mets' best move is going to be this year?
Not trading anybody.
Signing fucking Matt Harvey. That's how little that's how little the Mets are gonna do this year.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me. They still need to work on their training staff and keeping their guys healthy. Mm-hmm. So before you start trading for better players, keep the ones you have healthy.
Yeah, so we might as well touch on that email real quick right now since we already are doing it. Neither of us would ever even think about trading those two guys right now, right?
Yeah, my response was the best trade option is to not.
Who was it? It was Syndergaard, and who was the other one?
DeGrom.
Oh, yeah, Grom. Yeah, I mean, they're both young guys, so under team control, if you ever want to compete, you're going to at least hold on to these guys for now. If there comes the time to sell them, there'll be a time, but it's not yet.
Right.
All right, so what else you got?
The good and bad sides of throwing your glove. So the good is Ivan Nova tossing his glove to first to get an out because the ball got stuck in it. And the bad is Carson Smith, lightly throwing his glove onto the ground and blowing out his entire shoulder and probably being done for the year.
That's the most Carson Smith thing to do.
It really is.
So he's going to miss, he would have pitched 1 month in, like, a 24-month span by the time he's back from this injury.
Yep. And then he was trying to throw Cora under the bus and saying that he was overused. And Cora was like, wait a minute, we talk to every single player before every single game and ask, are you good to go? And if they say no, we don't use them. So before the game, he gave them the green light. He got used. He threw two pitches, and now he might be done for the year.
How often do you think, besides David Price, how often do you think anyone would say no, though? There's like such a tough guy mentality. I mean, maybe baseball is different, but I couldn't imagine a lot of guys saying no.
if you had just been used in two consecutive days.
Yeah, I guess.
Don't want to be used in a third, which, by the way, he had not been. So I'm not sure what it was getting. And he had pitched 14 and a third innings or so. But Joe Kelly, Matt Barnes, Craig Kimbrell, and one other pitcher had all been used more than he had. And he was complaining about being overused.
And it's not even like the Red Sox use their bullpen as much as a lot of the other teams. Like, their starters are pretty good at getting deep into games.
Yeah.
I didn't see the Nova play, but there was some pitcher who used to do that all the time. Or was it Lester?
He doesn't throw at all.
He doesn't throw his glove?
No, he just doesn't throw the ball to first at all.
Yeah, that's true. There was someone that had like the yips about throwing it to first, so they just always take off their glove when grounders came to them and throw it to... It might have been someone we talked about a couple weeks ago, the guy that looked like Freddy Krueger, whose name I forget, that would sometimes roll it to first. Julian Tavares, it might have been him.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God, that is an incredible comp.
Yeah. So, we talked about the things I have on my list. We talked about Harper and Rizzo. We talked about Buck Showalter. So I have one other thing on my list, and that's the Mother's Day equipment. I really like the pink Mother's Day equipment, the undershirts, the cleats, the bats. I love the bats. Whenever I'm in the show, I always hit better with the pink bat for some reason. None of the teams this year, I liked the pink hat. But are you for or against the pink uniforms? I mean, obviously everyone's for the cause of it. I just mean like the aesthetics of it. Are you for or against it?
Yeah, I'm for it.
Me too. I think teams should do stuff like that more often. I mean, the pink looks good with a lot of different colors. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of females that will listen that will disagree because I have bad taste in color matches. But I think the pink looks good with a lot of these things. Like, the Rays, it doesn't always look great with, but teams that have the dark colors, like the dark blues or the blacks, I think it looks great.
Yeah, I mean, the Rays with the light blue and yellow, that looks fine. The Orioles, though, like, pink and orange isn't a great match.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like they could do better
on
the holiday colors. I feel like they're still trying too hard to get, like, the team's core colors into it. Mm-hmm. They should just kind of go all in and just do, like, pink and gray when white with just the logo.
Some of these minor league teams, they'll do wacky uniforms all the time. What's stopping the majors from, like, it's just something that will interest kids a little bit more to see, like, oh, they're all wearing stormtrooper uniforms today and stuff like that, you know what I mean? And they can sell them, they'll make money off it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing, is there's 162 games, so you're going to be wearing a uniform 162 times. So for three of them, if you're wearing a pink uniform instead of the team's actual colors, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think they could do a better job, and I hope that they do. But, I mean, they're pretty cool looking now.
What do you think their thinking is for not doing something like that? Do you think it's just like the sanctity of old-timey baseball?
Probably. That's how it always goes, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah, we did want to touch on... you posed the question on, is it even worth touching on? And we kind of did with Matt Harvey to the Reds. So who cares?
Yeah, he's pitched for them twice. He started for them twice. His ERA is like 3.38. He's got a one whip. So he's got good numbers with them. It might have just been a change of scenery. Was there ever a season where he lived up to the hype of Matt Harvey? I think there was one year where he had an ERA under 3.
Yeah, I'd say before he had Tommy John, there was one season.
Yeah, and he's never, now that I'm looking at it, that's the only season he even pitched over 180 innings. He pitched 189 that season. So he was one of the most hyped and excited players for a long time, and it's just sad to see like he never lived up to it, and maybe just getting out of New York will make a difference in him.
And there's nothing like being traded to the worst team in the National League to make you want to pitch really well so that someone actually signs you in the offseason.
so you get off that team into a different team.
As fast as possible.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just like one of those guys that can't do it in certain environments or something. I mean, I guess he was doing it for a while. Maybe he never recovered from the injury fully, but it's just sad to see.
Sure is. So, a little bit of a prospect corner.
Yeah, and these are almost the guys that you want to sell right now in fantasy. Because their value is never going to be higher. And right now, people are saying Juan Soto is going to be like Vlad Guerrero Sr.
Yeah.
And he's not. So if you can get you know, something to build around in the future, like a plethora of things. Like, this is when you sell him. I picked him up in one of my dynasty leagues. He was owned in the one we're in together, but I picked him up in the other one, and I'm going to try to sell him. Because whenever these guys come up, it's like people will give you the moon, and then the chances that they're going to live up to it are pretty slim.
Yeah, like, I mean, you can look at these two polar opposites. You have Byron Buxton, who was, like, mm-hmm. for three straight years the number one prospect, and can't miss everything. His value was through the roof. And then there's J.D. Martinez, who was never, like, a prospect at all, mm-hmm. and is now the best hitter of the majors at the moment. Mookie Betts even was fifth round pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess I'm going to talk about two guys anyways, despite how I grumble about them. But yep. There's two guys. One is for Zeke Smets, Peter Alonso. At the time when I was writing all this stuff, his slash line was 373, 488, 686, and his strikeout rate is 18% while walking 16%. And he's got, like, pure power. He's a ways away, but I like him a lot more than Dom Smith. Dom Smith to me is more of a who's that guy that played first base for the Rays forever that had a good glove and didn't have a lot of power but could get on base a lot? I can't even think of who it is. Anyways, he's more of like a Julio Franco first baseman, Dom Smith. But I feel like Peter Alonso, the concerns about his putting the bat on the ball, and this year he has really dropped his strike rate and really improved his walk rate, and he's swinging at pitches he should swing at. So that's kind of the hardest thing for some of these players to get. Like we were talking about with Javi Baez. If Javi Baez had a batter's eye, he would be an MVP candidate the way that he plays. And Peter Alonso really made a leap to get the batter's eye this year, and I think he's someone that you should pay attention to, especially if you're a Mets fan that wants to trade your best two players. You might have guys like Peter Alonso to build around in the future. And then I just want to talk about Juan Soto, who just came up, and he's very exciting, and I do think he's going to be a good player, despite what I was just saying. He gets on base, he gets hits, he gets walks. Everywhere he's been, his average has been over 320. His OBP, his career OBP in the minors is 343, and he's got some pop. This year, in particular, he has 7 home runs already in the minors, so that's pretty good. Every year in the past, he hasn't played a lot of full seasons, so he hasn't put together huge years, but he did take a big leap this year, batting .323, .400 for the year. So keep an eye out for him. If he's available in your league, get him, but if you get him, I would try to sell him. Because the value is never going to be higher on Juan Soto. He is not going to be Vlad Guerrero, but he could be a very solid player for years to come. And he could have some upside to be that, but if you can get someone close to that already.
Yeah, Juan Soto is going to be very good. And so he went from A-ball to the major leagues in 45 days this season.
Yeah. Like, I bet there's leagues where you could get someone like a J.D. Martinez with someone who... it's like kind of out of it this year, but I'd rather have J.D. Martinez for the next 4 years than I would have Juan Soto, and I'm sure there's leagues where you can make that deal if someone's out of it. So,
yeah, and was it the guy that you were trying to think of? Was it James Loney?
Yes, it was James Loney. That's what I think Dom Smith is going to be. Whereas Peter Alonso, I feel like, is a more rounded player and he's going to have pure power, pure pop.
So yeah. After bringing up a topic that you wanted to talk about, how there's no power hitting first baseman in the minors, you went and found a power hitting first baseman in the minors.
Yeah, well, he's in like single A.
That's the minors.
I know he's a long way away. I couldn't think of any like on the cusp that I would want to invest in as a dynasty aspect. Let me see what level he's at now. So now he has gone up to double A now. So, but yeah, he has 11 home runs in 40 games.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's at least one really good first baseman. I think in our league, he's owned by the Mets fan, so I'm not going to get him. But then what I'm looking forward to this week coming up is another young guy that finally got his first hit and finally got his first home run, and that's Tyler O'Neill. He's getting some at-bats this time. The Cardinals have had a lot of injuries lately, and it's opened up some spots for Tyler O'Neill, and he's an exciting guy to watch. We both talked about his Paul Bunyan-esque lore, I guess.
Yeah.
So I hope he gets a lot of playing time because the Cardinals could use him in their lineup.
Yeah, the Cardinals are interesting. They are winning enough games to still be competitive, but their team, they just got guys dropping like flies.
Yeah. And then this weekend I went to the Sox and the Orioles, so that was exciting, but I hate Drew Pomeranz. A couple jobs ago, I had to write about him and how much I hated that trade. So even if he's doing good, I just have to stand up for myself and hate him, even though he's been fine. But of course, he's who I go to, and he was pulled in like the fourth inning. It was the game that they lost, but Mookie had a home run, so that was exciting. Yeah. How about you? I see you're looking forward to a game as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the Diamondbacks Brewers series. A couple of first place teams in the National League going at it, and that's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, my Brewers. I'm ready for them to bring in a pitcher, but.
Yeah, and actually, along the lines of your note, I'm actually going to be headed to the Brewers-Mets game on Sunday.
In Milwaukee or in New York?
In Milwaukee.
Nice.
And it is Travis Shaw, mayor of Ding Dong City, bobblehead day. So I'm pumped.
Are you adding the mayor of Ding Dong City because of what he was called here, or is that actually what the bobblehead is called?
That's legitimately, they have him standing at a podium, and it's a whole thing.
Oh my God, that's amazing!
Yeah, no, I'm so excited. When I saw that was a giveaway, I immediately purchased tickets, and I was like, "I'm going to Milwaukee for this game."
So that name followed him. That's cool.
Yeah, that was the name on the back of his players' weekend jersey last year.
Oh,
was
yeah,
the mayor of he couldn't fit the whole thing, so it was mayor of DD City.
They probably didn't want to put Ding Dong on there.
Yeah, or it might have just been DDC because I think the whole thing was still too long. But yeah, that was his name for Players Weekend, too.
Even putting the names on the back of the uniforms, the nicknames, they should do that more often. What do they do, once a year? And once a year you can choose your cleats or something? Like, all sorts. Yeah. Or is that football, the cleats thing?
Going back to David Price, I get that you love your pet, but dude, be more creative than Astro's dad. That was one of the worst Players Weekend nicknames out there. It was terrible.
So I wonder if he got that dog when he played for the Astros, because the last place I worked, we had one of the Hasselbecks brought their dog in, and his dog's name was Titan, and he would come in whenever he'd stay overnight. He would have a Titans blanket and stuff, and like his dog was the age where he got him when he played for the Titans. So I wonder if he got that dog when he played for the Astros, but that's an awful nickname.
It really is, isn't it?
Yep, that could be the worst. And he should at least just put Astro's like Twitter handle as his name or something, like at AstroDog or whatever. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure he has an Instagram or whatever for Astro. And I'm a dog lover, and even I think that's stupid.
One of the better ones, though, I just had it. Yeah.
Was the mayor of Ding Dong City?
No, it was Tim Anderson, the player on the back of his Players Weekend jersey was B. Moss.
What would yours be? I think I would intentionally try to do like a terrible, I'd just be like Michael Lavery or something stupid just to annoy people. So yeah, I think that's all we got.
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got too. So that'll do it for the show this week. Thanks for joining us once again. I'm Keaton DeRocher, baseball editor at Sports the Website. You can find me on Twitter at KeatonTDG. And with me as always is Mike Lavery, managing editor, Sports the Website. You can find him on Twitter at PassTheMike. So Mike, what have you been writing lately?
Well, that's a good question. Let me see here. So I just wrote an article about what to do with Blake Swihart. I didn't actually say the Red Sox should play him more catcher, but I think they should. But I was more talking about places he can get dealt. We have a new basketball writer who's been doing instant reactions to all of the games. And we also have been recording some things to the podcast. The first couple we've done is about Westworld. So if you're a Westworld fan, check that out. Yeah, so that's pretty exciting. But my writing, I haven't been doing too much lately, but I'm always keeping it interesting.
Yeah.
How about you? What have you been writing?
Well, same with me, because I've basically been out of commission for the past couple weeks. But today, I'm going to hammer out my couple months in, quarter of the way through the season, division reviews, starting with the AL West, and then I'll have another power rankings up by the end of the day as well. So we'll get those up there. So reach out to this podcast on Twitter at SeemsToMePod, email SeemsToMePod@gmail.com, and at SportsTheTweets for everything Sports the Website related. And as always, just check out SportsTheWebsite.com for all our awesome content. So lastly, thank you to Barricades for the use of our theme song, Young, off their album titled With Perfect Aim. So, Mike, let's end it with a fun fact.
Yeah, so like I mentioned on that we have this new podcast, Things the Podcast, and it's about non-sports things. The last one we did, we actually ended it with some penis talk. So I thought this one I would end the same way and let you know that Daddy Long Legs have penises, which technically make them not a spider.
Wow. What the hell does that make them? Other than I don't just know. Terrifying, but I didn't know that was a requirement for being a spider.
Well, they say that you eat an average of 8 spider penises a year in your sleep. I don't know if you heard that.
I have, yeah. So is that what they mean by eat a dick?
Yeah, that's exactly what they mean. Wow. So now you know. By next week, I will find out what they're classified as.
Yeah, I'm pretty curious to... But I didn't know having a penis was a requirement, or not having a penis was a requirement for being a spider.
Yeah, the more you know.
Yeah, that's a pretty wild one. All right, so yeah, just join us next week for some hopefully less penis talk, but we'll find out what Daddy Longleg is actually supposed to be.